Blog Talk Radio.
Just a step, cries the sad man. Take a look down at the madman. Theater king's on. Silver wings fly beyond reason. From the flight of the seagull come the spread claws of the eagle. Only fear breaks the silence as we all kneel, pray for guidance. We'll be right back.
Freaky Darlings, and welcome to Late Night Poets After Midnight Show, where you get to take a walk on the wild side. If you're into the likes of Ginsberg, Bukowski, Phil, and Giddy, Kerouac, or Morrison, then you are on the right night. But please check out our other After Midnight shows. Join Afasiana and Babla Thursday as they teach you to find out at becoming part sinner, part saint. Break on through with Pam on Friday, and then join Dex and Pam for Once Upon a Time on Saturday, and every other Sunday, sit in with Arcana and Luyu as they go delving deep into the darkness. These shows are designed so that you can color outside the lines with ritual emotions tinged with colloquial language, thereby pushing the envelope to expression and opening up new avenues of thought to pen and voice. So, pull up a chair, relax, and open your minds. I'm Rex, my co-host, Pam Lana. Can't wait to get into and read your words. Evening, Pam.
Good evening, Rex. How's it going?
All right.
Awesome.
What's
awesome.
Up?
Very good. Oh, let's see. Well, all in all, I'd say life is good. I got to go out to the secondhand store today, picked up some Halloween decorations, picked up a pumpkin for my daughter to carve and paint, and, you know, just had a really nice busy day. I've been taking advantage of, as I've said before, this weather that is just so spot on. It's that time of year when it's not too hot, not too cold. Because God only knows it's going to be too cold soon enough. But, yeah, so out and about walking today and enjoying the fresh air. And, yeah, had soup and bread for dinner, and that was good. Oh, my gosh. Bought one of those loaves of bread where it's nice and soft and you slice it and slather on the butter. Good stuff. Good stuff. How about you? What's up in your part of the world?
Not much, just yard work.
Yeah, that keeps you busy, that's for sure. But I imagine it's all worth it in the end. You have a nice yard like that. We had our backyard, well, the apartment building backyard. For some reason, one of our neighbors threw hamburger buns and bok choy out into the backyard. And we're not sure if they, because we get like rabbits and deer and squirrels around in the backyard and like trees and, you know. And we're not really sure exactly what they are thinking. Like if they think that, you know, the animals are going to come eat the hamburger buns and the bok choy. But that was like 2 days ago. And they're still there. There are no animals eating the burger buns or the bok choy. Go figure.
Well, so burger buns out here, they won't last a day.
Oh, my gosh. Right? Oh, you mean like where you live, they get eaten?
Yeah. Squirrels get it, birds will get it.
You know, you would think so. I don't know what it is here. I think in part it may be because they're whole burger buns rather than just, you know, broken up into pieces. The other thing I wonder is if it isn't because we actually have people in these apartments that have dogs, and they threw them, I think, because too close to the actual apartment building itself rather than closer to the woods, where the animals like to stay near the trees. But who knows? Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Well, yeah. I mean, you do have a great selection of animals. We saw a deer the other day, and I tried to take a picture of it, but it moved so too fast. So all I got was a picture of its fluffy deer butt.
Oh, yeah.
So, part two of Ho. What a wonderful choice for a contest there, Rex, giving us enough rights for two shows. Very cool. Very cool. I like it.
Well, I guess it's chicken in here.
Yes, yes, I think that is a good idea. All right. All right. Up first, we have What Leads to Sorrow by Nocturne. And Rex, go ahead, please, and give that a read for us.
What Leads to Sorrow by Nocturne. From craving's grasp, desires tightly wound, a bit of vine on souls it does confound. Shadows dance where whispers softly tread, suffering, tales of hearts misled. Silken webs of longing, endless streams, the shackles of attachment bind our tender dreams. We chase illusions under moon's disguise, like stars that seek their place in distant skies. From this craving, suffering we bear, in love's sweet dance, we're caught in passion's snare, the fleeting, the elusive, the untrue, like rivers seeking oceans we pursue. End poem. What do you think? I took all suffering originates from craving, from attachment, from desire.
I noticed all the prompts in the contest that did seem to be one of the ones that people were most drawn to. I have to say, first of all, I think you did a brilliant read of that. I mean, you just have one of those voices that are worthy of Poe. And speaking of being worthy of Poe, I mean, the rhyme and flow in this, it's quite admirable. It fought on. I really like how deep they got into the darkness, the heartbreak. It was an excellent write on wanting love so badly that we fall for the illusion of love. I thought for only three stanzas it said a lot, and I really loved it all the way through. But especially silken webs of longing, endless streams, the shackles of attachment bind our tender dreams. We chase illusions under moon's disguise, like stars that seek their place in distant skies. Not only does that, when it says we chase illusions under moon's disguise, give me that idea, as I was saying, of falling for things that aren't love. But the silken webs of longing, endless streams, the shackles of attachment bind our tender dreams. I mean, it really also speaks to me on the whole idea of how we allow the dreams of love to take up so much of our mind, so much of our heart, that it doesn't leave room for everything else that we could be enjoying and appreciating. I think this is a wonderful write by Nocturne, and I really hope that they write for more of our shows and that we get to read more from them. So very well done.
Well, thank you, Pam. Well, you look at that first stanza. It drops in the a little note to the telltale heart with that tales of heart misled. Nice touch there. And the sort of that shackles of attachment kind of has me thinking of a couple of other post stories. You can go with the Pit and the Pendulum and the Cask of Amontillado, I think, maybe. Anyway, I like the idea of silken webs of longing. That adds a touch of almost dungeon-esque feel to it, especially with the shackles of attachment tossed in under there. And we chase illusions from the moon's disguise. I like that for the ease. That note of what is it? That imperial thought one gets as to what is and what isn't. I know that's where the illusion comes from. You get this deep imaginative bite at what it should and shouldn't be, and all of a sudden the illusion has been created, and you will always be let down because that idea and note to perfection can never be met within one's mind, and it always leads to the end of the rainbow where it's heartache as he offers up in that tale of the parts in his blood. Everybody ends up suffering the note to it because one end is looking for that sort of perfection. The other one knows they can't meet that, so nobody ends up happy in the meantime. So I like that. Thank you, Noctuum.
Very cool. Great observations there, Rex. And I'd like to give a shout out to C.L. Howard, who is, I believe, listening in and hanging. He is hanging out on the board in Late Night Poets. So hello there, C.L. Good to see you.
What's up? How you doing, C.L.?
Very cool. All right. And up next we have Give Me Truth or Nothing by Henna. And it goes like this. Your slick lies fly no more. The glint of twisted facts bounce off the green in your cagey fox-like eyes. I play the game no more. Spurt the venom otherwhere, or I'll catch it in my palm and slap it in your face. Tell me I'm preferred not. State it to my open face. I'd sooner deal that deck than your devious embrace. End poem.
Well, Anna took the same thing. All suffering originates from craving, from attachment, from desire. So this is a bit more direct. The idea of hitting on that idea of your slick lies fly no more. I play the game no more. Tell me I'm preferred not. That ease of angled, I'm not going this route. Offer me up something besides the lies themselves. Give me some truth. I like it. The note of the glint of twisted facts bounce off the green in your cagey fox-like eyes. That's a nice description, offering up the fox-like eyes as, you're a bit more than just mischievous as the fox is. There's the thief in there. I like that. And then they offers up the spurt of venom otherwhere, or I'll catch it in my palm and slap in your face. That is quite the backhand, so to speak. Telling it like it is, and hey, you know what? You don't like it, get the hell out.
Yep.
What about you?
Oh, my goodness. I was thinking the same thing, that this one was a lot more direct than the last one. You can feel it's the idea of someone who has reached their limits, you know. And I, too, really liked that line about the cagey fox-like eyes, because, first of all, the word cagey, you know, makes me think of someone where you become so enticed with their eyes. You know, you just stare at them and you feel captivated. But after a while, it seems like that was the case here, but then after a while, they started to see there was something more in those eyes besides those lovely flecks of green. And, you know, I think of the fox as being, you know, mythologically a trickster, although usually a kind of a fun, innocent-type trickster, where here it's obviously somebody who can't be honest, who plays games. You know, tell me I'm preferred not, state it to my open face. I sooner deal that deck than your devious embrace. I thought putting in the deck, like the deck, dealing that deck of cards, like I'd rather play the game, or, you know, of truth than, you know, to deal with not knowing, not understanding. And I think a lot of the anger that comes through in this poem is anger expressed because of a reaction to feeling hurt or rejected. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
All right. Where do we go now?
All right. Up next we have Madman's Manuscript by Jody Melton. And go ahead, Rex.
Madman's Manuscript by Jody Melton. Deep within the psyche where thoughts once flowed, now shadows creep a writer's mind. Once vivid in the grip of dark doze, weep. Ink once fluid, now cotton. Tales twisted and awry as a quill that once scripted dreams. now sketches the sky. The parchment, once a canvas, now a silent, mocking foe. Words that used to flow like rivers have forgotten where to go. Pages once filled with magic now echo vacant stares, the whispers of a thousand stories lost in chilling airs. A lighthouse in the midst of thoughts now dimmed and deranged, navigating the storm of madness where sanity's estranged. The vastness of imagination, once vibrant and so deaf, now shrivels away with every stolen breath. His muse, a ghostly specter, drifts in haunting flights, a cruel mirage of inspiration, always just out of sight. Each stroke, a desperate cry, a struggle to recapture the essence of a mind, once whole, now fractured rapture. Yet in this chaos, a spark remains, a glimmer of the past, a testament to writer's spirit that will forever last, or even in his madness, with the sanity astray, the heart of a storyteller will never fade away. End poem. And Jody Took, I am the writer, therefore I am not the same. All right.
You know what? I think that is, honest to goodness, one of my favorite quotes from this contest. And it is so true. It is so true. I told my teenager one time that if you put seven different poets in the same room, nine of them will be insane. And, of course, she thought that was funny, but it's practically true, you know. But I really liked this. Great rhyme and flow, a wonderful take on the chosen prompt. I thought it also really paid a tribute to Poe's storytelling, because a lot of his dark stories deal with a psychological darkness. Today I happen to be listening to a podcast that, besides doing true dark stories, they also do readings of classic dark stories, or like they do the classic radio shows. And today I was listening to the Telltale Heart, and you get that idea in this poem, not necessarily the Telltale Heart itself, but that and so many of other Poe stories deal with someone who's losing their mind. I really like the parchment, once a canvas, now a silent, mocking foe. Words that used to flow like rivers have forgotten where to go. Pages once filled with magic now echo vacant stares, the whispers of a thousand stories lost in chilling airs. Honest to goodness, and it speaks volumes, because I think oftentimes, us poets, us writers would much rather face the trials of madness than to face the trials of writer's block. I also really like the imagery in his muse, a ghostly specter drifts in haunting flight, a cruel mirage of inspiration always just out of sight. Each stroke, a desperate cry, a struggle to recapture the essence of a mind once whole, now fractured rapture. I thought fractured rapture was a great phrase, not only for the kind of almost alliteration rhyme type thing that it does. Well, not technically alliteration, but it flows nicely, but also feels like the realization that there is no longer any putting the mind back together. It has become all these broken pieces that will never be the same. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Thank you. The opening stanza kind of hits it where it's going deep within the psyche, where thoughts once flowed, now shadows creep, a writer's mind once bid in the grip of dark does weep. He's relied so heavily on the deep recesses of what comes out of the darkness, that all of a sudden everything is not coming out, because it does hit on as a quill that once scripted dreams now sketches the sky. So there's that turn of note and phrase where, have I lost my grip? Have the words bled out? Is that touch of darkness that once flowed so easily now but something as old. The azure sky, Sean, that's not something you really want to dip into if you do right on the edge, so to speak, and it fits on that parchment like a canvas, a lighthouse in the midst of thoughts. Now, dimmed and deranged, navigating the storm of madness with sanity is strange. The vastness of imagination, once vibrant and so deaf, now shrivels away with every stolen breath. There is that. That's it on the the note of the muse. His muse being a specter. Once the at hand and ease of guidance that gets one through the deepest angles of its thoughts, now is offering up. But sketches to the sky. That it would be something that would drive somebody mad, especially when you do offer up the darkness and the tone of the story that does speak to the deepest angles of what makes people tick, the fear, the quickening of the heart. Those little dark corners we all have, but nobody really wants to go into them unless somebody else is writing the story. I like that. Thank you, Jody.
All right. And up next, we have Toxic Walls of Relationship Dejection by Jenny the Deep. Within these walls, monstrous screams echo. Toxicity builds like intense heat waves, while white lightning strikes our hearts. Love seeps 6 feet under as sorrow takes over. Records spinning on turntables in my head, playing tit for tat on repeat, dusk until dawn. Grudges transpire, stirring up resentment. It may be all said and done to you, but not for me. Oh, how I wish upon the brightest star tonight, and that tomorrow we can rebuild our walls and reconnect before the monster escapes, causing cataclysmic calamity and eternal dejection. Maybe I can laugh and smile with you again, but when thunder hits your tongue, the piercing sound leaving your mouth stings my ears and leaves me rattled. End poem.
Great week, Sam. Damn, Jenny went and took the first five prompts. The scariest monsters are the ones that live within our souls. The rain came down upon my head, unsheltered, and the wind rendered me mad and deaf and blind. Blood was its avatar and seal. All suffering originates from craving, attachment, and desire. And the eye, like a shattered mirror, multiplies the images of sorrow. Dipped into quite a bit. All right, let's see what we got. Within these walls, monstrous screams echo, toxicity builds like intense heat waves, while lightning strikes our hearts. The seat 6 feet under, as sorrow takes over. Ooh, all right. The arising of anger between two, and I like that note in the second stanza. Records spinning on turntables in my head, playing tit for tat on repeat, dusk until dawn. Well, that's one hell of a row, dusk till dawn, so to speak. And that note from spinning record, I like that. You kind of hit on the same music, the same rhetoric, the same dynamic being poured out day after day. That's enough to kill. And she hits on the grudges transpire during that resentment. That rolls right in with the turntable angle. And then drops in that third stanza, wishing upon the brightest star tonight that tomorrow we can rebuild our walls and reconnect before the monster escapes, causing cataclysmic calamity and eternal dejection. Well, if you're doing this as that repeat cycle, it ain't coming back. And then that last thing, maybe I can laugh and smile with you again, but then when thunder hits your tongue, the piercing sound leaving your mouth stings my ears and leaves me rattled. Well, that kind of tells the tale, doesn't it? It's not going to get any better. You best bite the bullet and leave it on track where it is and move on to something else. That record is not changing. Nice and well known. What about you, Pam?
Oh, I have to say that was a very thorough, dive there into that poem, Rex. So very cool there. I like this. I feel like Jenny takes us on a roller coaster of emotions, which is understandable, given that she took multiple proms and the fact that you're dealing with a relationship falling apart. I like how within these walls, monstrous screams echo. And I like how that can represent the actual house itself or the place where they live, the literal walls, or it could be like, you know, the whole idea of keeping those screams inside yourself, like you are the walls. And love seeps six feet under as sorrow takes over was a great way to express the idea of love dying. I also like the use of playing tit for tat, you know, on repeat. I remember reading once or somewhere, I can't remember, but something about a relationship being 100-100. You give your best, they give their best, and sometimes, you know, somebody has more to give than the other person. But this makes me think, besides of that was kind of an off-branch thing, kind of flying off onto the left field there. But this makes me think of the idea of how they say, like, you know, you can't fight fire with fire. It's basically two people that keep repeatedly getting revenge on each other for every little thing that they do until it just builds up. I did like the use of the alliteration and causing cataclysmic calamity. That was nice. And, you can tell, as you were saying, Rex, you know, there's this wish, oh, how I wish upon the brightest star tonight. That line there has such a childlike innocence. You know, it's like in that moment there, in that one line amongst all the darkness, there's this sense of hope that has a purity to it. But then when it gets to, but when thunder hits your tongue, the piercing sound leaves your mouth, stings my ears and leaves me rattled. And you know that she ends at that point. When she ends at that point, it becomes apparent that there isn't going to be this change. There isn't going to be this growth. And there, you know, that wish isn't going to be fulfilled. So excellent write and very well done.
All right. Where are we going?
Well, up next we have Dreamless by C.L. Howard. And go ahead, please, Rex.
All right. Dreamless by C.L. Howard. Sorrow be my shade to vision, velvet soft and wet. When black descends outside and in, and I drift in dreamless death, wishing once again to see your smiling face now past, to laugh at laughter from your mouth, feel your breath upon my neck. But nothing comes and all is silent as sorrow opens fresh, with nothing left but salt and sadness from my dreamless life and death. And see how foot partakes sleep, those little slices of death, how I loathe them. All right.
Oh, this is beautiful. It has a nice flow to it, even though it's not a rhyming poem. Like, you know, wet and death and fresh and death are near, almost rhyme, like a kind of a slant rhyme. And there's even something about past and neck, you know, that I know they're not obviously rhyming, but, you know, there's something about this that creates a great meter and flow, even though it's not a rhyming poem. And I like how he speaks on the idea of, you know, wanting where it says, when black descends inside and in my drift in dreamless death, wishing once again to see your smiling face now pass, to laugh at laughter from your mouth, feel your breath upon my neck. You know, just wanting that moment, that dream where that person comes back to life, you know, and or at least wanting that that sleep that brings you so far away from the grief that you feel when the sun has risen. I do have to say I really like where it says, "With as sorrow opens fresh with nothing left but salt and sadness." You know, speaking on the saltiness of tears, but the salt also made me think of Lot's wife turned into a pillar of salt who looked back, and it's almost like that idea of, you know, stop looking back and allowing the past to drag you into your despair. But it's just such a wonderfully emotive rite on wanting to escape the pain and despair that is continually faced. So amazing rite and very well done.
Nice, I like that. But he done this in a double note. That second stanza, wishing once again to see your smiling face now past, but he also offers up himself. When black descends outside and in, and I drift in dreamless death. So the double note is, with her passing, he ends up the living dead, that note of dreamless, because there is nothing now to give birth to the dreams, the love that he's lost. So this walks a nice hand-in-hand touch to Poe himself, kind of like Lenore and Annabelle. But nothing comes and all is silence. A sorrow opens fresh with nothing left but salt and sadness from my dreamless slice of death. It's an ever-present. It's got that nice touch of melancholy that sinks in with it, and it does offer up that note to it's a heavy weight that bears down. And even though it didn't rhyme, it did walk that note of a rhyming piece itself because it flowed just right. So thank you, CL.
And now I suppose we should find out what's next.
Yep.
All right. Well, up next we have Rigged to Trick or Treat by Eric Svensson, and we have a SoundCloud for that, so here we go.
Rigged to trick or treat, insanely curious, studious by nature, magnetic horseshoe-shaped universe draws its iron filings back in, rescind, rebuke, resist, persist in chosen play, villain versus victim, dictum decorum, chorus line dance, top hat and tails persist, insanely curious, studious by nature, heads or tails, magnetic horseshoe-shaped universe panhandles us back with 12 immutable triggers. Sooner or later, these invisible gill nets guide us back. Opposites attract, mix and match. Duality danced upon 12 immutable triggers. Insanely sure, madly certain, crazily convinced, these 12 triggered treats undo all tricks. Oneness, vibration, attraction, relativity, polarity, gender, rhythm, fired action, cause and effect, compensation, correspondence, perpetual transmutation of energy in poems.
Great read, Eric. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Pam, what you got?
All right. Well, first of all, I like that title, Rigged to Trick or Treat. I feel like that puts in the whole idea that part of human nature is that we're either going to have the possibility of offering up, you know, cruelty and heartbreak or love and kindness. Brilliant imagery and metaphors, wonderful use of alliteration. I really like how the main message of this to me is on that idea of finding balance and guidance within the vibrations of the universe and how all things are connected. I like the idea of the magnetic horseshoe-shaped universe, the universe that draws all things, either draws things to it or pushes things away from it, depending on whether you got that negative or positive charge. Magnetic horseshoe-shaped universe panhandles us back with 12 immutable triggers. Sooner or later, these invisible gillnets guide us back. I like the use of the number 12 being like either the 12 not planets, the 12 months or the 12 apostles. I mean, I think there's something about the number 12 that really stands out to me. I also like insanely sure, madly certain, crazily convinced, these 12 to retreat undo all tricks. I really like the phrases insanely sure and madly certain in the fact that, you know, be so positive, so certain of who you are meant to be that it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. You know, wonderful, right? And great. I don't know. It has an exuberant energy to it, and I like that. So very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Tina. The 12 triggers he actually gives us on the bottom end, oneness, vibration, attraction, relativity, polarity, gender, rhythm, inspired action, cause and effect, compensation, correspondence, perpetual transmutation of energy. Even though the 12 triggers might actually be the thought of the much himself, since you offer those notes right there, I'm going to take that as his idea of the 12 triggers, which brings us back into the reality. The idea of Rick the Trick or Treat is that idea of life itself. You can either take it as a trick, you can take it as a treat, but because he hits on that item where it's villain versus victim, it's how you choose to play the game. If you're going to be the villain, you're always going to be the villain. If you choose to play the victim, you end up playing the victim, and you end up in that almost a chorus line dance, so to speak. The top hat and tails persist. I like that. It kind of hits on that notion of, especially with the picture, the stairway to heaven. So it also hits on another role of that magnetic horseshoe calling its home. Is it the idea of what is actually going to happen? Are you tricked into alleviating yourself of all things and moving downstairs, or will the treat be heaven's gate? So I like the play in this, Eric. Thank you. All right.
Very cool. All right. Up next, we have Inking with Words by Jesna Sajan. Sicily, Sicily, you've ruined it all. Do it differently. Words run in clouds of cobwebs. In immersive, intelligent world, algebra and electrifying cobra throbs beats on Sicily's brainy cross worlds. Sicily, Sicily, you've ridden about Saul. He's not chivalrous or tall, barely ridden the effigy of a paragraph without chipping the edge of a mountain, not the start of an horrendous staff. Water drips and clumps on from a fountain. Sicily, Sicily, it was set in the edge of a lake moments later before a quake. From the vertical rocky surface, carrying the heavyweight champ, Saul climbed from the edge in pace, building himself from the tramp. Sicily, Sicily, tell him to move quickly. Danger ahead, danger swiftly. Sicily toppled up, swimming in the sky. Saul blew on both his shoulders, wings grew into his veins so much high. Sicily behind the armor of the kings. Sicily, Sicily, come on, be sane. Why coupled in a chain? As a writer from the clouds, I have the right to feel insane. Shake the bloodshed in shrouds, dripping fluidized lime on the lane. End poem.
Gregory Pam and Jasmine Cook. I am a writer, therefore I am not sane, and I became insane with long intervals of horrible silencing. nice touch using both of those. I like the playing this, especially with the Sicily angle. You ruined it all, do it differently. You've written about Saul, he's not chivalrous at all. It was set in the edge of the lake moments later before a quake. And the little interspersing of words run in clouds of cobwebs in the immersive intelligent world, algebra and electrifying cobra throngs, beats on Sicily's brainy crossworld. It gives the impression that she's playing off two angles, maybe the crossfire across her brain itself. I like that thought. And then barely written the effigy of a paragraph, so it is kind of going back and forth in the context. But I do like the back end of this. It offers up, Sicily, Sicily, come on, be sane, why coupled in a chain? But the humor in that last stanza, as a writer from the clouds, I have the right to feel insane, shake the bloodshed in shroud, dripping fluidized lime on the lane. Lime, I like to bite them. Hey, take a sip of this and see how it tastes on your tongue. A little bit of humor. Thanks, Jazz. Thank you very much. All right, Pam.
I liked this one, and I liked the observations that you made on it. There was a nice touch of humor to it. I really thought the use of repetition and rhyme within like the stanzas created a nice lyrical quality. I like how this spoke to me on the idea of a free spirit whose mind soars into realms others cannot see. That especially comes through in those last couple stanzas. You know, Sicily, Sicily, come on, be sane. Why coupled in a chain? As a writer from the clouds, I have the right to feel insane. Shake the bloodshed in shrouds, dripping fluidized lime on the lane. You know, here's somebody who's just soaring beyond the understanding of other people. I also really like how it seems to be about told from the perspective of people who don't understand the creative process, don't understand someone's connections to a character. Like even when you like read a book and you get deeply into the characters, Sicily, Sicily, you've written about Saul. He's not chivalrous or tall, barely written the effigy of a paragraph without chipping the edge of a mountain. Not the start of a horrendous staff, water drips and clumps on from a fountain. So that stanza there speaks to me on how Sicily, the poet, the author, sees so much potential within this character, and yet she's barely scraped the surface. This is a wonderfully clever write all the way through and very well done.
Nice. Thank you, Pam. And we do have the sea listening in first for After Midnight. I don't know if the sea's hit any other programs out of it yet, but welcome, sea. Hope you're enjoying yourself.
All right. Well, good, good. I'm glad to hear that. Awesome. Awesome. Very cool. Very cool. All right. And, oops, let me go grab a poem. I didn't grab the next one. Yep, always good to know people are listening in. And of course, are inspired. So let's see what we have here. All right. Up next, we have Nice Elegance, Part 8 by Zulfikar Hamdam Awan. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read for us, please.
Nice Elegance, Part 8 by Zulfikar Hamdam Awan. Sleep, those little slices of death's embrace, in twilight's realm where time and dreams give chase. Why load them, these fleeting hours of respite, when the world dissolves and reality takes flight? Each night we waltz with the enigmatic unknown, in slumber's grasp, our consciousness overthrown, the mind's theater where fantasies ignite, in sleep's gentle cradle we embrace the night. Within these shadows, secrets may unfold in the realm of dreams where tales are told. For in these slices of death's sweet trance, we glimpse life's intricate mystic dance. So load them not, these gentle hours of rest, where spirits roam free, unburdened and blessed. Embrace the night, its mystery to explore, tender grass, and find something more. And pumps. All right, Pam.
Great read there, Rex. This is such a beautiful write. Again, he writes with such wonderful rhyme and flow, beautiful imagery. I like how his poem really, to me, is what I would call an answer poem. Like, he puts the quote or part of the quote in the beginning, sleep, those little slices of death, and then but turns it dust embrace in twilight's realm where time and dreams are chased. And then the question, why loathe them, these fleeting hours of respite, when the world dissolves, reality takes flight? And then he proceeds to tell us, you know, all of these wonderful things about sleep, you know, how it's a chance to refresh the body and mind. And how the thoughts that come forth in your dreams, sometimes they can be scary, but other times they inspire and ignite a passion within us. And that especially comes through in the mind theater where fantasies ignite and sleep's gentle cradle, we embrace the night. Within these shadows, secrets may unfold in the realms of dreams where tales are told. You know, isn't it interesting how oftentimes you can wake up from a dream and just have a thought that wouldn't have necessarily come to you during the waking hours? So it really is a wonderful write on the importance of sleep and the beauty within the dance of the dreaming mind. So wonderful write and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Zulfikar took it a different way. He offered up his nice elegance, and he wrote it in an elegant fashion. The writing was spot on and flowed evenly and quite well. And he could offer up those notes to the fact that it is within those flights of fancy, those dreams, when REM takes hold, that all those little tidbits and things that happen during the day get resolved, because we take so much information in that most of what we do not connect with in the moment. It's in those sleeping hours where the brain actually sorts through everything, puts them in their proper perspective, or offers up something that you can relate to later on that makes sense, because it didn't make sense in the moment when it first entered the spirit of your mind, so to speak. So for that note to letting everything flow in a manner to resolve itself is a great way of looking at sleep, and that touch of death, because in that moment you are pretty much dead body-wise, while your mind hatches everything out and gives some semblance of ease when once you wake the next day. So nicely done, Senator Goff. Thank you very much. All right.
All right. Well, up next, we have The Reaping by Lockdown Larks. How long shall I be dreaming of this place where darkness abounds? Who shall lift me gleaming? Show me your light and heavenly sounds. Or are you the reaper coming for my eyes? None then come to douse my sorrow. Can there be such so morbid as this? A smile or a whisper could I not borrow? A scent, enchanting laughter, one last kiss. O reaper, no need for a raven disguise. The wind howls at me, hurling shadows. I am but one step from the door. I think of her and my heart slows. This loss is eating away my core. O reaper, why seek so my demise? Incessant ticking timepiece on the wall. Speed up now for this lonely lost soul. Take me from this sorry night's thrall. Oh, but I see, can I ever again be whole? I forget, reaper, you own these night skies. Why then contemplate matters so grave? Surely shall my spirit soar again. And yet, my love, I could not save this place forever than a place of pain. Come on, then, reaper, together we shall rise. End poem.
Great reaping. I like this, especially considering if you take those parentheses and lines, or are you the reaper coming for my eyes? O reaper, no need for a raven disguise. O reaper, why seek so my demise? I forget, reaper, you own these night skies. Come on then, reaper, together we shall rise. It offers up an extra stanza done between the five, but also an extra piece within the piece itself, which kind of hits on the idea of with the question and gone on through the whole piece, those parentheses lines offer up an extra voice within, because it hits on the idea of that thought of coming to your eyes, the placing of coins, the raven disguise, that idea of that which comes knocking upon your door, so to speak, and then the question, why, and then forgotten that you do own these night skies, the darkness therein, and then the back end. It is the reality, the understanding. I'm coming to that note of understanding that it is time. So he says, come on, reaper, together shall we rise. That understanding, I like that. It offers up, especially with the title of The Reaping, he understands at the back end of this, with those five lines put together, they do, even though he's questioning what's going on, he grows a little bit suspicious to begin with, and finishing up with, hey, come on, let's take that ride together. I'm ready. What about you?
Absolutely. I like that observation. And I, too, really appreciated how he had the last lines and parentheses, which created, as you were saying, its own, like, brevity poem within the longer poem, its own separate thought and yet connected at the same time. You know, this just has wonderful rhyme and flow, beautiful imagery. I noticed someone at the beginning of their comment said, I did feel the marrow of Poe's Raven when I was reading it. You know, and I have to agree with that. You know, there is this idea, because in Poe's Raven, he's grieving, you know, for his lost love. And you feel that. You feel that grief within that, especially when with the second stanza, none then came to douse my sorrow. Can there be such, so morbid as this, a smile or a whisper? Could I not borrow a scent enchanting laughter, one last kiss? Wishing for that one last moment of happiness, that one last moment of love expressed, you know. And I like how he expresses the raven as being a messenger of death, the reaper itself, and that hope that just maybe. Maybe it is time. It is time to soar up to that sky, to that heaven, and reconnect with one lost love. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
All right. Where do we go now?
All right. And up next, we have Nocturnal Nuances by Weaver of Dreams. And Kate was nice enough to supply us with a SoundCloud. So here we go.
Each night, although weary, my eyes hot with tears, when I lay upon my bed with satellite eyes adown, try then to sleep, horrors awaken, and repulsive fears. My limbs quiver, and within my chest my heartbeats quake. Gibbering terrors wait behind the veil, slobbering and evil. My mind filled with thoughts that I will never again awake. Sleep paralysis is unnoticed by most, but not I, or so it seems. When Morpheus creeps through the darkness and captures me, it is the prelude to a night of horrific, disgusting, unholy dreams. The worst part of those nocturnal hours that leave me feeling ill are the abhorrent, nauseating, sick acts my dream self performs, which are out with my control and completely against my will.
Great read, Kate. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. What do you think?
Well, first of all, as always, she did a wonderful read. I'm always thrilled when she makes a SoundCloud. This one, to me, I found particularly terrifying because of the fact that sleep paralysis is a real thing that many people suffer with. I actually used to have that problem because of my narcolepsy. And the thing with narcolepsy is you don't always consistently have the same symptoms necessarily. Sleep paralysis is a pretty common symptom, part of narcolepsy. And it's terrifying because you're awake and yet there is nothing you can do. Like, you can hear what's going on around you and you can see, but you can't move or respond. I thought this had great rhyme, which, of course, you know, we've had a lot of poems with great rhyme for this contest because it is a poll contest, and that's what people do when they write for a poll contest for the most part. Not always, but a lot of times. I really like how she delves so deeply into the darkness. I mean, this is a brilliant dark write on the horror of visions and sleep paralysis as one loses control of body and mind. And I think not only sleep paralysis, but so many times, any condition that has to do with sleep and your inability to control it is terrifying because you feel as if there's this, like if you're somebody who just has nightmares all the time, if you have sleep paralysis, even if you have like narcolepsy where you can, you know, go into the catatonic state or, you know, whatever they call it, where you just drop or you just get extremely tired when you know you should be awake. It's all very terrifying to lose control. I really like My mind filled with thoughts that I will never again awake. Sleep paralysis is unnoticed by most, but not I, or so it seems, when Morpheus creeps through the darkness and captures me. And I really like how she's drawn Morpheus into there. Very cool. And the worst part of those nocturnal hours that leave me feeling ill are the abhorrent, nauseating, sick acts my dream self performs. It's the dreaming mind, the subconscious, is such a fascinating thing, because oftentimes we do awake saying, you know, where did that come from? That is not me in real life. You know, that is not me when I am awake. So why has it entered into my subconscious? Brilliant, right, by Kate, and very well done.
Nice, thank you, Kim. Kate delivers fear without actually offering up the note that there is. It's all set within the language. I like the note, set a light, hide her down, and then try to sleep, horrors awaken, repulsive fears, well, she does have fear there, limbs quiver, heartbeats quake. I like this one line. Gibbering terrors wait behind the veil, slobbering and evil. Nice touch with that. And then in the middle of it drops in that sleep paralysis. I know it's but not I, so it seems. And it did like the Morpheus creeps through the darkness. Then again, it is the prelude to a night of horrific, disgusting, unholy dreams. Those nocturnal hours leave you feeling ill. And then again, abhorrent, nauseating, sick acts my dream self performs. All great words that Poe would have chosen to offer up that note there, that little touch of nuance that niggles into the skin and gets the mind of thinking, oh, damn, yes, that is bothersome. That is something that can be related to very easily. Nicely done, Kate. Thank you very much. All right. What's next?
All right. Well, up next we have Inside Out by Rob Azza. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
Inside Out by Rob Azza. Thinking like an unkempt asshole, these flicks of sorrow, these vile bits of bile, tucked between the ducts of our intestines. Well, you just can't shit them out, them loose, or get them out, or even vomit them clean. No, no, no. They stiffen like sulfur, corrode from the inside, hiding their darkest best as they burrow into the membrane, away from air, free of love, free of empathy. They will ride you, turn you inside out, from the outside in, only to cage the one thing you can't see. And Rob took the first prompt, which was, scariest monsters are the ones that lurk within our souls. All right. That was nicely graphic. What do you think?
I like this one. I like how he went so visceral and, you know, with his imagery. Such a raw reality to it. Raw, I think I mixed raw and brilliant there. I don't know what I was doing. I just totally stumbled over my own tongue. Brilliant, visceral imagery and metaphors. Really, to me, it was an amazing write that spoke on the way emotions cut deep and turn us inside out. But I think it also speaks on how we all have those darker parts of ourselves, those horrifying parts of ourselves that we wouldn't want to expose to anybody else. And we know they're in there and we wish we could get rid of them, but they're always going to be there. Those just horrifyingly ugly parts of ourselves where you can't shit them loose or gut them out, or even vomit them clean. I like how he says gut them out, because to me, that's a representation of you try to get rid of these visceral, ugly, horrifying parts of yourself, and you're going to end up killing the whole of yourself. And as they burrow into the membrane, away from air, free of love, free of empathy, they will ride you, turn you inside out from your outside in. I mean, all the way through this is a brilliant write, but I have to say where it says free of love, free of empathy. To me, that makes me think of the whole idea of, you know, I mean, and it's a wonderful thing to have emotions and to be human and to connect with other people. But sometimes when you're hurting, you wish, and you feel overwhelmed that you could just let loose that part of you that didn't love, that didn't care. You know, but it is a good thing to have those parts of yourself. But keeping that darkness within cage can be a difficult thing to do. But I really thought this was an amazing dark rite and very well done.
Nice. Thank you. Anyway, I like the whole thing. Two parts to hit me up. They will ride you, turn you inside out from the outside in, only to cage the one thing you can't see, that one thing, the reality of who and what you really are. I like that note to finish off, but that opening is quite stark, stinking like an unkempt asshole, these flakes of sorrow, these vile bits of bile tucked between the ducts of our intestines, where you just can't shit them loose or gut them out or even vomit them clean. That opening set of the like seven lines, I guess, is visceral thought, because the intestines, hey, it holds all our waste. So why shouldn't it hold the deepest, darkest sense of who and what we are? Because that is where the bile is hidden before it's then extricated or shat out, so to speak. But in this case, because of how viscerally evil you are, that's the one place that emanates the true reality of who and what you are. And the back end opening up that thought, only to cage the one thing you can't see, is you don't notice just how monstrously evil you really are. It's that part and parcel, you are that it. And, hey, you can't see it. So I like that. Thank you, Rob. That was cool. All right.
All right. Up next, we have Diefenbunker by Ken Smith. And it goes like this. Commissioned by Prime Minister John Diefenbaker in 1959, a nuclear fallout shelter capable of withstanding a 5-ton nuclear blast a mile away, built to hold 565 politicians with food for 30 days and a massive air filter system. Against radiation infiltration, a vault deep on the fourth level stored the country's gold reserves. Who says you can't take your money with you? As we Canadians held our breath during the Cuban Missile Crisis, then let out one long shared sigh. Now a Cold War museum, our school bus parked on the grounds. We ate our packed sandwiches waiting for the tour guide to arrive. End poem.
Great detail. And Ken took Let Me Glimpse Inside Your Velvet Bones. A clever bite at the voice with this one, though, even though it comes out of a Cold War era bunker built for, just a few hundred people, with food, a perfect air filtration system, and all the goals in the country. That doesn't sit there and offer up too much hope past the idea of nuclear war. Hey, we'll be alive. The rest of you be gone. it's almost that note of sarcasm with the thought now turned into a Cold War museum as they sit in the school bus waiting to get inside. And the funny part is, you know why it's a Cold War museum now? Because they got a bigger, better bunker. And then it'll survive a larger blast with living quarters for a year underground, and they won't have to worry about nothing, which is the reality. Oh, my God.
I did like this for the fact that, yeah, even though it's a bit of what one once was, they've got more than they need now and in better circumstances. And, hey, it kind of hits on that note. Hey, we're just the fodder for when it happens. Because someday somebody's going to do something stupid. And one of them will. Nicely done, Ken. Thank you very much. All right, Pam.
I really like this one. I really do. And I always like Ken's poetry. But I have to say, and I always feel awkward saying this, but, you know, this is absolutely one of my favorites of his. And I think part of the reason is because, you know, as your comment made me laugh, that it's so true. There is that of, you know, screw the common man. You know, all of us 565 politicians will be safe. You know, and it's got such a bite to it. And what a creative take on the prompt, the chosen prompt. Let me glimpse inside your velvet bones. And here we are looking at the exposed bones of the past. I thought this had a clever and sardonic bite on the saving of politicians and gold, but the common people must hold their breath and hope for the best. You know, great lines all the way through. I like where it says, who says you can't take your money with you, as we Canadians held our breath during the Cuban Missile Crisis and let out one long shared sigh. And now this part, a place has become a museum. And I like how he compares this place becoming a museum to being that bones of the past exposed for what it is, nothing but a futile hope to save the rich and the ass kissers, you know. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
All right,
let's see where we go to now. Do 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 do. Did I grab the next one? That is the million-dollar question. Yes, I did. All right. Up next, we have Shattered Mirrors Scream by Keng. And go ahead, please, Rex, and give that a read.
Shattered Mirrors Scream by Keng. Shattered mirrors hurt like gravel rash grips open bloodied knees. Your back seen in shattering mirrors as I snap a last coda before a door slams shut. Raining razor blades rip into each heartbeat and nails drawn from rooted quips. Time returns blunt razor burns to red shaven cheeks and nails regrow pink again. As mending itches, the scratched scars form snow tracks through men's emoluments and lettering cream. Coarse nails soothing scratches while shattered mirrors still scream. End poem. And thanks to the eye like a shattered mirror multiplies the images of sorrow. All right, Pam.
All right. Well, first of all, great read there, Rex. Wow. I mean, this, powerful imagery and metaphors, emotive lines. You know, that speaks to me on the idea of someone who is a cutter, who needs to feel that physical pain in order to have some connection to emotions, in order to actually feel something. And raining razor blades rip in each heartbeat and nails drawn from rooted quips. That nails drawn from rooted quips, I have to say, speaks me on the idea of how people's words can be so cruel. And as mending itches the scratched scar from snow tracks through men's emollients and lanolin cream, you know, it just the whole idea of healing. You know, whether it's a physical or an emotional healing, it's such a difficult journey to go through. And oftentimes, even when the physical healing process is over, or you've gotten through that difficult time in life, you can still look in the mirror and see those scars, you know, see that ugliness that you thought you had. You can be the most beautiful person inside and out, and the trauma, the cutting, you know, the self-harm brings you to this point of, you know, being difficult to look in the mirror and embrace the person you are. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Wow. There is quite the picture there, looking in that shattered mirror itself. Such a sad look in the mirror. But that second stanza, I like the back end of that one. As your eyes snap a last Kodak before a door slams shut. That does hit on the idea of self-deletion in the moment. The door slamming shut, and then opening up the next stanza with raining razor blades ripped in each heartbeat and nails drawn from rooted quits. Imagine being so hard at yourself that you pulled your own nails out from the root. Yow. And the thought of running blunt razor burns to red shaven cheeks. The idea of running that bick, so to speak, the bick razor continuously over your cheeks until you scrape away skin. Well, there's some serious pain rolled into that one. And then as mending itches, the scratch scars form snow tracks through men's emollients and lanolin cream, coarse nails soothing scratches while shattered nerves still scream. There's a bit more than just cutting. This is someone who's deliberately hurting themselves because there's something walking a little bit on the ugly side inside. There's a mental problem going on with this piece, and it reflects that because there's something about how the eyes of the mirror is going to toll, and what you see within as you look yourself in the mirror is kind of an ugly situation. It kind of reminds me do you remember Hannibal? When he had that guy who was doing paupers, and he gave him a piece of broken glass and told him to cut off pieces of his face and feed to the dogs.
Yes. It does have that vibe to it. I could see that. Well, great observations there, Rex. All right, let me get to where I need to be, and I'll put up the next poem. All right, up next we have Glazing Eyes Among the Thorns by Titanium Mom. Peering through my mirror, seeking hope from thorn and aching soul, my mind ever wanders, showing love and insight, ever reaching for impossible goals. Bathing in my sorrow, you were my hope. I have longed to see your sunshine, eyes so bright and so strong, but I lost hope. The darkness of my anger seems to swallow me whole. Peering through my mirror, glazing eyes among the thorns, now I am home, images of sorrow multiplied by hope that's gone. End poem.
Great read, Pam. There's a lot of, there's anger, there's a touch of hope, and there's all the sadnesses. Images of sorrow multiplied by hope that's gone. the idea of looking into that mirror itself, peering through my mirror, seeking hope from torn and aching soul, my mind ever wanders. Let's keep lost in that one. Showing love and insight, ever reaching for impossible goals, bathing in my sorrow,
You are my hope. Child, I have longed to see your I have longed to see your sunshine, eyes so bright and so strong, and then lose the hope. The dark summer anger seems to swallow me whole. There's a continuous cycle because of the idea of losing. It's never a great thought of losing a child, and especially a young one, because that's where everything evolves when it comes to parents. Your hopes for their future and what that might bring dashed in the moment. Oof, this is a hard one. And something a little different as well. I wasn't quite expecting something like this, but thank you, Titanium Mom. Another first one, Bush. What about you, Pam?
Well, you know, I just have to say I am just so truly sorry for her loss, and it just feels so empty saying that, but, you know, I just don't know what else to say because I just can't imagine that pain, that loss of a child. I do think I'm first of all really glad that she was inspired and has found a way to write about her experience and her grief and her pain. And she expresses so beautifully the grieving process and how it isn't just sadness alone. You know, there is the sadness, but there's also the anger at fate or at God or even at yourself. And then that hope that someday she'll see him again. And I believe, and I know everybody believes differently, but I truly believe that she will see him again. I mean, it just, wow. I mean, this hits hard. It's poignant. It's heartfelt. You are my hope. I have longed to see your sunshine, eyes so bright and strong, but I lost hope. The darkness of my anger seemed to swallow me whole. Oh, I just, you know, I know that as a mother, and I think the majority of us as parents, if we lost a child, would feel that same anger. So, you know, this is such a deeply personal right that I feel touched that she would share it with us. So, wonderful right and very well done.
What's up next?
All right, let's see here. Do-do-do-do-do, grabbing the next one. All right. And bouncing back. All right. And up next, we have Detached by Bill Schiller. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read, please.
Detached by Bill Schiller. From the hole at the bottom of a hole, rock bottom knows sound of my fall. Nobody shall reach out hands to save me. I am alone as rock buried beneath desert sands, empty as dumped garbage can. Solitude is restless refuge of a single man. Shall I phone you? If I tried to hold you, would you push me out the window? Forgotten, as hole in pocket, as loose penny drops without spare. Alone down here, I see you in the air above. The less you care, the more I dare to love. And phone.
Great deep breath.
Oh. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
No, and if you have, oh, yeah, no, his wasn't to for our contest, but it just fit with the general theme. I really like where he starts out with, from the hole at bottom of a hole, rock bottom knows sound of my fall. For some reason, that brought into my mind the song, There's a Hole in the Ground, Dear Liza, Dear Liza. But it also makes me think of the whole idea of having to hit rock bottom. And where it says, no sound of my fall. I feel like this is speaking in the voice of someone who has hit rock bottom over and over again. And I really like this all the way through. But especially solitude is restless refuge of a single man. Shall I phone you if I try to hold you? Would you push me out the window? There's a bit of a dark humor in that. But it's also that look at, you know, what it's like to be somebody who's single, who's looking for affection and, you know, isn't really sure how somebody is going to react, and how when it comes to relationships, when it comes to love, it really is risky business. So clever, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Carol. It's on detached, though. It kind of hits on the idea of being detached from humanity, so to speak, or at least the idea of people, because he hits solitude, is restless refuge of a single man, and the idea of wanting attachment. Shall I phone you? If I tried to hold you, would you push me out the window? And that note being the reference to being a hole at the bottom of a hole, rock bottom note, kind of my form, and then alone down here, I see in the air above, the less you care, the more I dare to love. Could be a bite of spirituality, so to speak, but it also could be the idea of thinking oneself so low that whomever they're looking up to, so to speak, is someone they care for, but does not notice, because he does hit on that sort of being buried beneath the desert sand, or as empty as a dumped garbage can. So the essence of being fully unengaged or left for nothing kind of rings out.
I like that. Very cool. Very cool. Great observations there, Rex. All right. And up next, oops, let me try this again because that's the exact same poem. All right. Going back. Grabbing the next one. All right. Is It Okay by Bosgal? To love the works of, is it okay to love the work of my hands but not my hands? You beat around the bushes and deny me my harvest. We have worked picking the dust from the hairs of our noses, sniffing the remains with the cold, and you scold with whips and codes. The Bible you gave says, let them gather the wheat's fallen, yet you keep even the crumbs from our zipped lips and hollowed bellies. I cry my eyes to sleep. Is it okay? I binge in fallen dreams, fantasizing about the seasons, once filled with bountiful fields of myriads of cornrows planted by the quivering hands of my aging fathers, that wonderful morning scent of fresh dew, blessing the works of our hands and the freedom of civil peace. I dream on, ending in beautiful nightmares. I'm a wandering block. Is it okay? I'm never enough to be built up, scattered and fallen like the old walls of Jericho. I hurry and crumble once again in bewilderment of your unending doings. You make me sorry that I exist. I'm terrified of looking. It's not okay. Looking at the scars and remains of history is too burdensome. So I slay every yoke that comprises of reality. I bury myself in denial, since that has been my heavy drug. Keeps me sane, now insane. I'm still wondering if it's okay to wander about like this in pain, ashamed of my last name bestowed upon me because of your heinous actions, things I hated to do, afraid with innate disgust in my mirage of happiness, I still claim it's okay. End poem.
Great read, Tim. And Bosgal is another newbie to the show, so welcome. And she took, I became insane with long intervals of horrible sanity. This is quite the difference of it, quite the idea. Offer up the question up top and then roll into the piece itself. Is it okay to love the work of my hands, but not my hands? You beat around the bushes and deny me my harvest. Your work picking the dust from the hairs on my nose. There's some nice, clever thoughts there. Picking the dust from the hairs on my nose, sniffing the remains with the cold, and you scold the whips and codes. The Bible you gave says, let them gather the wheat's form, yet you keep even the crumbs from our dipped lips and hollow bells. Ooh. It's a tongue lashing to God, so to speak. He keeps offering up. I binge in fallen dreams, fed by the seasons. I'm never enough to be built up, scattered and fallen like the old walls of Jericho. I'm terrified of looking at the scars and remains of history is too burdensome. So I say, every yoke that cries to reality. But she finishes off at the bottom end, jumped without the question, and then finishes it. Afraid with innate disgust in my mirage of happiness, I still claim it's okay. So she's opened up with a question, offered up the note to what ends up seeming to be the absentee father, so to speak, and God, yet fully answered the question on the back end herself. So the idea of the toil, the work, the harvest, there's a lot in this that most people know shit about and have never realized because they've been pampered all their lives. This generation and the last generation have been so pampered, they know not the idea of working the soil, actually looking to build that note of food, to pick the gold, to collect the wheat and then beat the flour out of it so that it's all the kernel to make flour, so to speak. And anything that goes beyond what they find in the store, easy to pick up, render, as opposed to actually getting into and doing the toil, the work itself. So she does answer the question, even though it's hard and it's burdensome because of history's repeat angles, all that. There is still life to be enjoyed and be happy with. So I like that. Thank you, Bob Downs. Yeah, Cam, what about you?
Yeah, I really like this one. And how great to have another new name. I look forward to reading more of her. I really like the powerful lines in this and the imagery and metaphors and how at first she's asking, is it okay? And then near the end she says, no, it is not okay. I like how this goes on both a social, a broader perspective, but also on a personal pain. I thought this was a powerful and emotive write, taking a deep look at personal history carved out by the cruelty of humanity, but also the cruelty of an individual. But you really feel the weight. The weight and the emotional burden of a history lived that was filled with a lack of respect for people as individuals. I binge in fallen dreams, fantasizing about the seasons once filled with bountiful fields and myriads of cornrows planted by the quivering hands of my aging fathers. I dream on, ending in beautiful nightmares. It makes me think of, speech, I Had a Dream, by, Martin Luther King Jr.? It made me think of that. Every yoke that comprises of reality, I bury myself in denial. You know, sometimes it's easier to be in denial than face the pain of the truth. I also really like the mention of the old walls of Jericho crumbling. It's a great representation of the body and mind falling apart, but it's also a metaphor for that victory, because the moment that the walls of Jericho fell, it was a moment of victory for the Hebrew people who put their trust in God. So I thought this was a brilliant write and very well done. And next we have Paean of Lenore by Poetic Picasso. And go ahead, Rex, and give that a read.
Paean of Lenore by Poetic Picasso. Avaunt the collision of shadow of grim sorrow by the tenfold specters of thy mortal surcease, haunting then thy drooping soul with the fresh morrow, singing the phantom dirge of thy spiritual decease. My poor Lenore, thou art my virginal blood maiden, who I have sought through the soil of the wrought earth, from less unto the dim halls of Hades laden, with souls of draconian and plutonian dearth. A thousand times I had summoned thee before, awaiting thy grateful return in a dubious haven. In the depth of this lorn heart of mine I could claw, when I hearkened the calls of the guiltless raven. I have followed his ominous croak and his gaze that led thee on to the tenebrous day gloom, with ineluctable vagaries of thy perpetual maze, of thy tormented despair, of the token of doom. Now I sing the eternal pain of love and glee in the empyrean winds that blow upon the dew. Upon my winsome guise, as I stood behind thee, I had whispered, Lenore, Lenore, 'tis I, Guy, anew. Let us rejoice in the untainted mirth and gaiety, in the chamber of divinity, my ceaseless bride, amidst the hymns of praise from the pious laity, whilst thy spirit is blessed by the seraphim that glide. And gone.
Wonderful read there, Rex. I have to say, what an amazing combination. Your deep, resonating voice with Frank's use of classic language. This has wonderful rhyme and flow, brilliant imagery. It truly is a classic style poem with its word choices that really is captivating and will be so for years to come. I like how he speaks in the voice of Poe, the voice of Poe longing for Lenore, wishing for that reconnection, to find his true love amongst death. I really like where he says, a thousand times I had summoned thee before, waiting thy grateful return in a dubious haven in the depth of this lorn heart of mine I deplore when I hearken the cause of the guiltless raven. And I like how this is about that time period after the raven, where you can imagine the character, you can imagine Poe going out and searching for his bride within the realm of death. So wonderful, right, and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Frank drops in nicely with the idea of putting in some Greek touches in the left one of the five rivers in Hades, and then Hades itself, and Draconian, Plutonian. What else we got in here? I like the book, "Now I Sing the Eternal Pain of Love and Glee in the Empyrean Winds That Blow Upon the Dew. Upon my winsome guise, as I stood behind thee, I had whispered, Lenore, Lenore, 'tis I, Guy." Kind of that note to walking into Hades to find and then live within that eternalness of well, not just the sort of the chamber of divinity, so to speak, but the idea of joining. It doesn't matter where they went, as long as you can join them there, it is but an ease of thought that one can pass into that realm easily. And then live a note of some sort of happiness. So nicely done, Frank. What we got next?
All right. Up next we have "In Dreams by the Sea." Just before the dawn, I lie bathed in the blue hour, suspended in the place between conscious and subconscious, on the edge of both, immersed in neither. This is when your face begins to fade. I wake to a world I no longer recognize, alone, and you are gone with my dissipating dream like a mist in the night, spirited away by the early morning air. Waking alone with a tear-stained face has become routine, no substitute at all for waking in your arms and listening to the rhythm of your heartbeat that sang me to sleep. I close my eyes to the approaching daylight, willing sleep to reclaim me once more, to rescue me from reality, the nightmare I cannot wake up from, to spirit me back to dreamland where you're waiting for me as you always are, where we are together forever as we had planned. In my dreams you wait for me, yet sleep evades me. Weak sunlight creeps through a gap in the curtains, softly heralding the beginning of another day. The world is changing color from blue to gold, and I struggle to make sense of why it is turning at all. There is a hollow ache inside of me. Part of my heart is missing, taken with you as a memento of true love. 6 feet of earth is no barrier to the love we shared. It cannot truly separate us, neither can death. In my restless dreams, I see your face. I hear your voice calling me, whispering my name on the wind, only to wake bereft in emptiness, feels heavy as stone. Left alone and forlorn by the arrival of new day, chasing that which is left behind, me and now only exist by night. In dreams, dreams of you, and poem.
Great read, Pam. And Steve took all suffering. Emin originates from craving, from attachment, from desire. And I like the tale, offering up that orality to page from one's own experience in the moment. Almost like a, not just a story, but the act of trying to explain oneself because you can't sleep in the moment. So that you got that opening just before the dawn, I lay bathed in blue hour. A nice touch to open up the piece with, suspended in the place between conscious and subconscious, on the edge of both, immersed in neither. This is when your face begins to fade, that forgotten hour, that note to twilight, so to speak, that gray zone. I like that. And then waking to a world no longer recognized because of the death, waking alone with tear-stained face. The litany kind of rolls down into a moment-by-moment note of of all that is going on. It's got almost, I wouldn't say a diary. It goes deeper than that. Then the sort of, I close my eyes to approaching daylight, willing to sleep to reclaim me once more. The idea of going back into that dream world again to see, because that note of lightness coming into the room, that little touch of blue, so to speak, before it becomes the bright morning, and you want to go back because in there, in that dream, you've got this a sense of reality that you can't, you don't recognize in the waking state. So the dreamland is something special in the moment where grief can be separated from the heart, mind, and soul in the moment. It's on, in my dreams you call for me, yet sleep evades me. Weak sunlight creeps through a gap in the curtains, softly heralding the beginning of another day. The world is changing color from blue to gold, and I struggle to make sense of why it is turning at all. Again, great notes, hard notes to grief, and that questioning note of, well, kind of a note to survivor's guilt. Because that's hit on also that note of, what's it? 6 feet of earth is no barrier to the love we shared. It cannot truly separate, neither can death. And left alone and forlorn, kind of hits on that heavy note, the melancholy. So, nicely done, see. That was something else different too. That's a quiet ease of storytelling that works well. Thank you.
It really does. And how wonderful to see another new name. I'm glad they were inspired, and I look forward to reading more of them. This had just such beautiful, heartfelt, and emotive lines that speak on the idea of longing to have someone back, you know, physically, emotionally. You know, it speaks on the separation of death, but how, you know, death cannot, you know, kill off love. And I like your observations that you made there, Rex, and especially on survivor's guilt. Because I think even if, you know, the death isn't the person's fault, there can still be that sense of guilt. I really liked this all the way through, but especially how it speaks on the thought that, you know, not wanting to wake up to that loneliness, that emptiness. I especially like, in my dreams you wait for me, yet sleep evades me. Weak sunlight creeps through a gap in the curtain, softly heralding the beginning of another day. And I love that they put weak before sunlight. Weak sunlight. The idea that there is nothing. The sunlight might be good and pure and beautiful for everybody else, but for this person, it's nothing more than a reminder of their pain and their suffering. So amazing, right, and very well done.
We got a couple of minutes. What we got for Twisted Tuesday?
Well, for Twisted Tuesdays, Jean is running a contest, and let me see. It's actually really cool. It's she's got this artist that has done a variety of paintings of different mythological creatures, such as the phoenix, the siren, the unicorn, hippogriff, Pegasus, Strix. I mean, there's like a whole bunch of them. They're just absolutely beautiful, absolutely captivating. I highly recommend that people check them out. I know for me, I've downloaded the Strix. That's the one I'm planning on focusing on. Yeah, definitely poetry readers and commenters always welcome. And how about you, Rex? What are your plans for next Sunday's show?
I still got a half a dozen write some Jack Sonny, the other guitarist, Dire Straits. So we'll finish up that and probably add in a couple extra stuff on the back end as donations, just to get that one out of the way. Then Gary writes the following week, Dreamweaver and such. Now, the Strix is like Vampire, isn't it? Or is the Strix kind of like
a Strix is a blood-drinking creature. It's actually an extremely dark. It started in ancient Greece and then actually lasted until Middle Ages and kind of evolved. But the Strix is a bird-like creature that came awake at night, cried, and drank the blood of infants. It then developed into the Strigma, or there's different pronunciations of it. Like, there's actually different versions of the Strix. In some Eastern European countries, it's actually the term for actual vampires. Other times, it's the term for in certain countries is a term for actually a witch. But the whole idea is the thought of the Strix, no matter which form it takes, whether it's a bird or a woman or which country it comes from, it always has an unnatural appetite, and especially an unnatural appetite towards children. Varying, of course, in the ways it's presented. But, yeah, so that's the Strix. And,
I was thinking it rolls in line with a Strigoi from Romania.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. They both stem from the same. Yep, very much so. Very much so. But yes, I'm guessing whatever, you don't want to go with something that drinks the blood of children. That is absolutely fine. I think there's like 20 other options in there. You know, you've got unicorns, although the unicorns can be pretty badass too. So, but definitely you got your options there. I would like to mention real quick that for the next Break On Through show, I am running a contest with the artwork of Stephen Larson. So if people want to check that out. And great show tonight, Rex. I really enjoyed another night of Poe.
Yeah, and it worked out nicely. And we got everybody done. So that's cool. It was quite the bounty of different sorts playing off of those quotes. I might have to do a mashup with Poe and Morrison one day. See what we get out of that.
That would be fun. Yeah, that would be very cool. All right.
And we'll do this again next Tuesday, after midnight. So come join us once more. Good night, everybody.